Good morning and good afternoon, depending on what part of the globe you are joining us from. As the host said, I am Sylvia McCauley King, a professor of history at California State University in California, where it is still very early in the morning. But I'm still pleased to be joining you all at this time. Let me start by extending hearty congratulations to Her Worship the Mayor, Yvonne Akisoya, and all the councilors at the City Council on this historic milestone, keeping the city moving forward in spite of all the setbacks from time to time. It is indeed important to stop and reflect. And that is what will happen in this first panel on the One Journey Symposium, this panel of historians and others who are interested in the history of the city. This panel has been broadly titled Lives in West African Communities Before the Transatlantic Slave Trade. And our speakers, we have about four speakers who have been invited to share their perspectives on this journey from their various vantage points. And so I will introduce them and call on them in the order in which they are listed in the program. And they have been asked to speak for about 10 minutes so that we will have some time at the end to entertain questions from the audience. I will now introduce the first speaker, my good friend, Professor Ismail Rashid, a fellow comrade, historian. Professor Rashid grew up in Freetown, Sierra Leone, and has been teaching at Vassar College since 1998. He received his BA honors in classics and history from the University of Ghana, master's in race relations from Wilfrid Laurier University in Canada, and his PhD in African history from McGill University. His research interests include subaltern resistance against colonialism, public health, and conflicts and security in contemporary Africa. And so I invite Professor Rashid to give his 10 minutes of reflections.
Thank you very much, Professor Sylvia McCauley. I realize the emphasis was on 10 minutes. What I'm going to do very quickly is to join you and to join my good friend, Adrian, in thanking the mayor, the organizing committee, and all those who put their energies into organizing the series of events to commemorate the arrival of Africans from different parts of the United States via Nova Scotia to Freetown. I know we know them in our history of Sierra Leone as the Nova Scotian, but for many of them, their stay in Nova Scotia was fairly brief, 4 or 5 years. And these some of them were people who would never have considered themselves Nova Scotians because they joined the ships from the United States to Sierra Leone. Just what I want to do today really is to give just fairly three broad sets of remarks as a way of joining the conversation. So when I saw the topic, West Africa before the Atlantic slavery, I said, no, they can't be asking us to do this. Because I teach an entire course, and I'm sure many of my other colleagues teach entire courses on Africa before the Atlantic slave trade. This would have meant that we would have spent the morning going through the rise and fall of all Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Kanem, Bornu, speak about Nok, the Hausa states. This is just mind-boggling. Thankfully, there are excellent volumes on the history of all of the states and people that I've mentioned that really I would enjoin those who are members of the audience and Sierra Leoneans and people in Freetown in particular to read. We need to be attuned to the history of not only our city or our country, but also our continent. And I'll return to the theme of the history of a continent in a little while. But one of the things that I did was to go back to really the document, which is the seminal document that really mediates the experience of the people who came from Nova Scotia to Sierra Leone. A well-known book, I mean, in Canadian circles, the Canadians can't get enough of talking about the Book of Nichols, which is really a list of over 3,000 so-called Black loyalists, people of African descent, who chose to strike for, fight for their freedom by abandoning the American revolutionaries who were talking about wonderful ideas of human liberty, of human freedom, but want to keep people of African descent enslaved. And the British made really an ambiguous proclamation vis-a-vis them. Come over and fight for our sides against these folks who want to keep you enslaved. And of course, the British lost the war. And the folks who were losers, who were known as the loyalists, went to British North Africa. By the way, it wasn't called Canada then. It was called British North America. So they went to British North America. And that big problem that I'm going to talk about in a minute kept following these people of African descent. We have to be careful between that tension between the history of people self-identified as queer and the history of the city of Freetown. Yesterday's march past, cultural march past, was fascinating because it showed what the city is at this particular point in time and how it had evolved through its 200-year history. I really want to caution us to think about that carefully, because Adrian, my good friend, you started off with saying that we want this to be an inclusive moment for Freetown. The second is we must be aware and we must balance the tension between history and heritage. Between history and heritage. History is much more complicated, it's much more messier, it's much more contentious. And I like one of your slogans on the 230th anniversary, which says, Freetown, many stories, and therefore many interpretations. From its inception, from that moment of the finding of that new settlement by the people that came from Canada, it was a contentious settlement. It was a contentious settlement. The meaning of what Freetown was and what it was to become was never settled. It was never settled. It was never settled. And I'll come and talk about that on a third point. And that third point sends me back to the scholarship that exists here about Freetown and about Sierra Leone that are written by different sets of people, both people that are identified as Creole and non-Creole. It's fascinating. And some of them have been our professors. I mean, Arthur Porter, Quintola Wise, Mark Bailey Five, Francis Wise, Philomena Steady, and one of our colleagues, Joseph Bangua, have all written histories which shows that Freetown is a place of contentious and multiple narratives. I don't have time, and in the Q&A, we can go into what those contentious narratives look like and how they shape the kind of vibrant Freetown that we in. I'm going to end up with a final set of remarks. And this is partly because this is where I'm most comfortable to speak from in terms of my experience. As first, a colleague of mine was sort of exchanging this morning. And I said, look, as somebody who identifies first as Black, African, Sierra Leonean, Freetonian, and ACO, what does Freetown mean to me? in terms of not only as a professional historian, my experiences and thinking about the world. There are a number of things. And also politically, I have never hidden my colors here. I am a Pan-Africanist. I believe that my experience predisposes me to be a Pan-Africanist, somebody who considers themselves first and foremost, not only a citizen of all of those identities that I have said, but that being a Black person from Africa positions you to be in the world in a certain place.
So then let me introduce another friend and colleague, Professor Nimata Blyden, who is a professor of history and international affairs at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. She holds a BA in history and international relations from Mount Holyoke College and an MPhil and PhD from Yale University. Dr. Blyden specializes in African and African diaspora history. She is the author of many books, most recent of which she co-authored Between Africa and America, Recalibrating Black Americans' Relationship to the Diaspora with Dr. Jeanette Eileen Jones. And her most recent book published in 2019, African Americans and Africa, A New History, published by Yale University Press, provides an introduction to the relationship between African Americans and the African continent from the era of slavery to the present, examining the diversity of African-American identities through relationships with region, ethnicity, immigration, and slavery to investigate a fundamental area of African-American studies. And so, without further ado, I introduce to you my friend and colleague, Dr. Nimata Blyden.
Thank you, Dr. McCauley. And thank you to the mayor and the committee for having me. Like Dr. Rashid, I was stumped by the request to talk about such a broad topic. And so I obviously I'm not going to, but you know, I thought I would just sort of do a sort of a general and then perhaps support some of what Dr. Rashid was saying. When we teach our students about West Africa before the slave trade, a daunting task, we talk first and foremost about the diversity of African communities before the period of the slave trade. As we try to get our students to understand this history, right? There's so many things that we can focus on. The kingdoms, right? That Dr. Rashid referred to, ancient Ghana, ancient Mali, you know, Kanem-Bornu, the Kingdom of Congo, all these many polities, the stateless societies, right, that existed in West African communities, communities that govern themselves in different ways. I'm currently teaching a class on women in African history. We can talk about the experiences and the lives of African women before the slave trade, what their lives were like. Oh, I should be looking at my time. What their lives were before the slave trade took so many millions of them away. What were their cultural practices, their religions, right? Their food traditions, or we can talk about it specific to Sierra Leone, the communities that were in Sierra Leone, or we could talk about it in general. What were those traditions, those cultural practices that existed in African societies before the slave trade? On the American side, and you heard that I'm a scholar of the diaspora, on the American side, and you'll hear this later as we examine those connections, right? We look at what the cultural retentions and the legacies of Africans who were brought to the Americas were, right? What did Africans bring with them? So understanding these societies before the slave trade can tell us something about what Africans brought to the Americas. For so many years, scholars studying African-American history, scholars studying the history of Africans in the diaspora, talked of them as people who came as blank slates, as people who came with no history, as people who came with no culture. But as one historian has said, Dr. Michael Gomez, Africans who were brought to America or to the Americas, had lived, he says, as members of specific societies in Africa, so that although their lives were altered by enslavement, they continue to be informed by both the African antecedent and by the unique combinations of their distinctive backgrounds in the various locales of the Americas. Their cultural and social provenance, he says, became critical to grasping the totality of their sojourn and its relation to corresponding experiences elsewhere. That is, the Africans who ended up in the Americas didn't leave their homelands behind in their memories. They may have been physically wrenched from Sierra Leone, Ghana, what is today Ghana, what is Nigeria, what is today Angola. They may have been physically wrenched from those places, but their memories of those places remained. Their cultural practice, in their cultural practices, in the way they raised their children, in their naming practices, right? Scholars in the Americas today studying African cultural retentions talk about the ways in which Africans under slavery in the diaspora managed to though given names by their captors, given names by those who enslaved them, managed to hold on to their names, managed to hold on to elements of those practices and pass those names down to their children, pass those traditions, those cultural practices down to their children. And this is why today we can talk about the Nova Scotians. And again, I want to sort of reinforce what Dr. Rashid said about the label of Nova Scotians. I mean, it's sort of an easy way to talk about this group of people, but important to remember that these were enslaved Africans from the United States, largely these people who I'm talking about, who came with elements of Africa with them that they took to Nova Scotia and then took back to Sierra Leone. And so we can talk about them today. These were men and women who had fought to return, right? Perhaps they didn't hope to return to Sierra Leone. Perhaps they hoped to return to the very spaces from which they had been taken. Remember that some of these men and women may have been born, may have been African born, right? Been born in Yoruba land, been born in somewhere else on the west coast of Africa, or west central coast of Africa. So these were people who had a desire to go home, right? But they ended up in Sierra Leone and that became their home, right? And so we celebrate them today.
Now moving into the realities of communities during the enslavement eras in the Americas, and the community that best and has an end-to-end story to tell us that experience are the Gullah Geechee folks of South Carolina, in what's known as the Low Country. We have the best moderator for this session, Amadou Massale. He has walked those grounds and associated with the Sierra Leonean, and he's made a lot of connections in that area.
Thank you, Adrian, and everyone else. Good morning. I must say thank you to all the efforts that have been put into bringing this event or the week-long activities that have led up to this event. And hopefully we'll get to learn some more today. I particularly want to talk about a specific relationship where we have found some of the deepest connections between Africans and African Americans. I'm not saying there are not other stories, but this one has the best examples you can find in terms of how Africans connect to African Americans in some of these stories that you will hear about today. But from Sierra Leone and other parts of West Africa, Africans were taken to the colonies, South Carolina first, and then Georgia later. After that, some of these guys ran away from slavery into the Florida wilderness, fought against the U.S. Army, kept them at bay for 7 years. Finally, they agreed to negotiate, and they went west into Oklahoma. From Oklahoma, after a few years, some of them went into Nacimiento, Mexico, where a historian has told me that he found Termini wards in Mexico. Termini wards. And then from Mexico, they ended up in Brackettville, Texas, So we have people from one or more of these areas that will tell their stories with regard to what they know about their connections to Africa. First, I want to call on Victoria Smalls. She's an executive director of the Gullah Geechee Heritage Cultural Commission, Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor Commission. Victoria Smalls, welcome.
Yes, good morning, everyone, and thank you, Amadou. It's so great to see everyone. I'm glad to see you today. So on behalf of the Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor, National Heritage Area in the United States of America, and our 11 federally appointed commissioners, I bring greetings to you from our satellite office in Beaufort, South Carolina. I'm a proud Gullah Geechee woman from St. Helena Island, South Carolina, and I am a very proud descendant of West Africans brought from 12 to the United States from 12 African countries, Senegal, Guinea-Bissau, Mali, Guinea, Sierra Leone, Ghana, Togo, Benin, Nigeria, Cameroon, and Congo. All of that, along with European ancestry, makes up who you are looking at today. So I want to share an African proverb that we often share with our Gullah Geechee people here. And it says, however far the stream flows, it never forgets its source.
And representing Oklahoma on this call today is Senator Anastasia Pittman, who's a Black Seminole. And let's hear her story. Welcome, Senator Pittman.
And thank you so much, Amadou. And I apologize that I am with my father, so I'm not on camera. But I just wanted to say what an honor it is to be here to share with all of the professors, the mayor, and all of the people who are still carrying the torch of their history. It is such an honor. I am a former state senator, Anastasia Pittman, from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I am the executive director of APRI, the Anastasia Pittman Research Institute for Indigenous People of Color. And what we have discovered is in the passing of my grandmother, we have learned to do things in her honor. She has such a rich history of her account from the Trail of Tears to from Florida to Oklahoma. Their leader in Florida was a gentleman named Abraham. And Abraham was a multilingual person, a leader from Florida who we talked about the treaty that was signed. I heard you guys mention some things, but we had a treaty that was signed. We had several treaties with the Seminoles and a treaty that was signed in 1823 from the Florida Tribe of Indians. We understood that some of the population, that's where they make their first mention of African Seminoles in the population of Florida. And so there's a historical proof of the Estalusi settlement of Florida, well over 100 years prior to 1823.
The initiatives that happened over this 230th year celebration a very interesting one. There's a very interesting connection, and I think it's a very powerful one that's been made. And I think it's you'll appreciate hearing from the collective Canadian efforts in this session. We will start with Dr. Afua Cooper, who will set the stage. Carol Millett's team and others would follow along with productions from the Black History Societies.
Thank you, Adrian, for all your efforts. And for the invitation, I want to say a big Big greetings to the mayor, Her Excellency Yvonne Aki-Sawyer. Thanks to you and your office for this wonderful invitation to participate in Freetown 230. I also want to send greetings or bring greetings to all my colleagues, to all my friends, and to all my family members on this call. My name is Dr. Afua Cooper. I'm a historian of the African diaspora and of Black Canadian history. I teach at Dalhousie University, which is in Nova Scotia, Halifax, Canada. I am also currently the principal investigator for a new project called A Black People's History of Canada. So let me situate myself a bit. Originally, I'm Jamaican. I was born and raised in Jamaica. I do have some links to Sierra Leone. On my mother's side, we are descended from Trelawney Maroons. And, you know, so there's a connection with Nova Scotia, Sierra Leone, and Trelawney, the Trelawney Maroons of Jamaica. I was actually born in Westmoreland, which is not Trelawney. Westmoreland is another parish. But some of the Trelawney Maroons during that conflict with the British had escaped to other parishes or fled to other parishes. And so my maternal ancestors had fled to Westmoreland. The family continued. The Black Loyalist story has been near and dear to my heart for many years. And as part of my scholarship, as part of my work, today I'm going to speak on Thomas Peters, will contextualize his story, his history in the wider Black Loyalist story. In 2014, I did a residency at the Maritime Museum of the Atlantic. I am also a poet. And the museum had this artistic residency, and I did a week there. The museum is in Halifax. And one of the things that you had to do, well, it was really neat, was that you had to select an object or an artifact that the museum had in its collection and write something about it. Either you write a play or you choreograph a dance or a poem. So I wrote a poem, and the object that I used was that painting of the 15 ships that the Black Loyalists, the almost 1,200 people, that on which they traveled to Freetown in Sierra Leone, and they left Halifax Harbor on January 15, 1792. So that painting was my inspiration. I mulled over it for the first 2 days, taking notes, just diving and delving into that history. And then after, you know, by the fourth day, you had to have something done. So the poem was written and it was performed. And I traveled to different schools, high schools, primary schools, performing the poem, telling the story of the 15 ships and the immigrants who were on the ships. So that was in 2014. And subsequently, we did a website called Black Halifax, on which that video poem is located, and also 12 other stories about Black experiences in Halifax, including a poem done by Valerie Mason John on specifically on Thomas Peters, where she channeled Thomas Peters.
All right, so good afternoon, and thank you. And I also wanted to say congratulations on the 230th anniversary of the exodus of the Black Loyalists and the anniversary in terms of going to Freetown, Sierra Leone. And we're very privileged to be part of this celebration. And like you said, it's a part of connecting to our history, to our rich history. And this shows the strength that we have across the diaspora as well as within Africa. And so today, I have some young students here that what we want to do is talk about the hashtag 1792 project. And it began with a message in the bottle in September. And what we were aiming to do is to make sure it's just the beginning. So it was the beginning of how we could tell a story that has not been told. And how could we make sure that others knew about this deep history that has been left out of our curriculum, that hasn't been written in? And so we wanted to make sure that we could engage not just ourselves, but also young students within the educations of Nova Scotia, across the province, so that they could take part and learn more about the Black Loyalists of 1,196 individuals who left on 15 ships. And some of the students have never heard about this. They heard about the migration, but they haven't heard about individuals getting on, Black Loyalists getting on and leaving this province of Nova Scotia because of contracts that were broken, promises that weren't kept, unemployment, racism that what Dr. Fu spoke about earlier. So what we did is that we made a presentation to the Executive Council in December, and we came on board. They actually did some proclamation where Carol will speak a little bit about that, but through Catherine Winkler, introduced us to this project in terms of 1792. We decided to call ourselves that so that we would never forget the year, this important year of when the Black Loyalists left to go to Sierra Leone. And then we want to tell why they left and the conditions that they endure here in Nova Scotia. And so we began on this journey, this educational journey to fulfill our mind, and to make sure that we gain knowledge and that we share this knowledge and this story, this rich story across the province.
Because I've come on to this meeting a little bit later, but I've heard you speak about the genealogical records and the connection between some of the Creole community and other regions within Sierra Leone. But I just wanted you to touch on that again, because I know like there's that North Carolina connection through the Gullah Geechee community, but was there also the connection within the liberated African community? That was a large amount of them from different parts of Sierra Leone, because I'd always assumed that they were mainly Yoruba. Yeah, so that was my general question.
Let's see if there's a historian who can dabble in that. Any of the historians want to? If not, we will...
Well, I could say that the Yoruba in the liberated African community formed a huge majority, but they were not the only one. There were Igbos. You had people coming as far south as Congo up to Sierra Leone. The ships were captured by the British Navy and they were taken up to Freetown. There were numerous other liberated African ethnic groups from Benin area, Benin meaning the Republic of Benin. So no, the Yoruba, being Yoruba, kind of have this big presence, but there were many, many other groups from different places in Wolof people from Senegal, for example, from other places in West Africa and West Central Africa.
Yeah, if I may buttress that point, we have Angola Town, for example, in Sierra Leone. We have Congo Town. So these are people from different countries other than Nigeria, even though Nigeria was the largest group. Sierra Leone was and still is a melting pot.
Yeah, this is Akinyele. I do want to add that essentially, I think it was about 1840s or so, there was a German linguist in Freetown at the time who recorded, I think, about 100 languages, different African languages in Freetown alone. And I also believe that between 1807 and I think the 1820s, there was a large influx of recaptured slaves from within the Sierra Leone interior. So it's a quite broad group that make up those liberated Africans.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to ask Adrian and some of the organizers about the Muslim or the Islamic component to this celebration, and also to the Creole heritage, because we know well, within Sierra Leone itself and the present-day Republic of Guinea, there is that huge connection, right? It's, it used to be like one country back in the day. And so the Islamization of Sierra Leone started to happen coming from Guinea. But there were a lot of Muslims, especially from Nigeria and Senegal, who came into Freetown area, the peninsula, as part of the whole liberated African movement. So I want to know if that component is going to be, is part of the celebration or part of the commemoration.
Yes, I will answer that. The Mayor Midge, you guys could hear the bells ringing at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Good. The mayor of Freetown made sure this process was very inclusive, and if you'd like to appreciate it, you could look at the parades and even the programs. Every group that's part and parcel of Freetown was included in this celebration, and I think that creates the jump-off point for a lot of interconnection activities. So yes, that was not missed. So folks, the bell rang at 6 o'clock, the vigil to that for the 230th celebration effectively has started. I would love to keep you all here, but I believe that's another activity you'd like to see. And so if you go on to the Freetown City Council site, or you go through the social media link that has been sent out, you will find connections to any of the streaming services that has been provided. It will be on Freetown, historicfreetown.com as soon as that link is also made available. No, people do not want to go, so I will give you all a view of Freetown as it is. And
wow, very nice.
Mm-hmm. We were just there in January.
I miss Sierra Leone. I miss it. Wow.
Well, folks, the bell has rung.
Very nice.
I could leave this on for those who just want to stay on and chat, but I've got to go join the activities and prepare for that session. Again, okay. I'm going to just leave it on. And so you can enjoy the moment and say and have a few last words, but I will step away. Thank you all for being part of this session. Thank you for everybody that took time to contribute, took time to give information, took time to prepare. And for the hosts from the Carolinas to Freetown, from Nova Scotia to the Caribbean, from California to Maryland, thank you very much for giving up your time. And look forward to seeing you all at the next symposium on this one journey to this great location that has so much history written in all its different infrastructure and buildings. Just the lay of the land, what may look like chaotic to some people, is a lot of stories that are on those faces of the buildings and the communities around this coast. Thank you again. Thank you, everybody.
God bless.
God bless.
Thank you very much. That was wonderful. Great symposium. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much.